Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Arr, it's me. Hello.
I'm scared. Why does he do this to me every time? Hello!
Today we're going to be playing Fleet? Is it a pirate game? I thought it was a fishing game.
It is a fishing game.
Designed by Ben Pinchback of Wasteland Express Delivery Service and Matt Riddle, also of Wasteland Express Delivery Service. It's developed by Rick Sood of Tumblin' Dice. The artist is Eric J. Carter of Eminent Domain, and it is published by Eagle Griffin Games. The description is, in the northwest corner of Nunavut, Canada, a formerly inaccessible bay off the Arctic Ocean has become reachable through a secret inlet. Untouched by the hands of time and fed by both the ocean and warm freshwater springs, Ridback Bay is teeming with sea life. A remote, timeless bayside village is now being inundated with entrepreneurs awaiting the influx of the world's greatest fishermen to harvest the plentiful bounty. The docks and warehouses are being revitalized, and now it is time to begin the real adventure. Go build your fleet and become master of the high seas. The mechanics are auction bidding and hand management. The box art is some fishing boats in a very cold-looking, foggy, mountainous bay, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it looks like a scene you might see from Deadliest Catch.
Yeah.
And very realistic portrayal, too. It's not, done by some sort of painting, but it looks kind of like a digitized.
Yeah, it's not watercolor.
No. I was trying to avoid that term.
So based on all this, would you pull it off a shelf?
I don't know if I would. I mean, I've heard good things about it. I don't really fish. I do enjoy watching Deadliest Catch.
Really?
So maybe it's a hit or miss.
I've never seen it.
Really?
I don't know. It's one of those, like, I don't know. I don't want to call it a guilty pleasure because there's nothing really wrong with the show. But it's one of those things where it's just like, it's not a great show, but it's interesting.
But it's a show.
But it's a show.
It's a show.
It's on my TV, so I watch it.
I also wouldn't pull it off the shelf.
I probably would not pick this up off the shelf. Fishing is not a thing that I know anything about.
Yeah.
Right?
The box art is, I guess, a little too fishing. They're just doubling down on the fishing, I feel like. I also didn't know
fishing games are pretty popular, aren't they? Apparently. Isn't there like that bass in arcades and stuff?
Oh, yeah. They're like the Bassmaster game. Uh-huh. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do we think it's played? Oh, God, there's nothing to go off of.
Yeah. Well, there's auction.
Are we bidding on boats because we're building a fleet?
I'm going for that. Yeah, that's right. We're building a fleet.
I'm guessing we're not auctioning fish. I guess we could catch them and auction them off.
Well,
that wouldn't be players buying it. That makes no sense. Yeah. So we got to be buying boats with our auction bidding. And hand management is going to be the fish. We're going to draw fish cards.
No, I think the hand management is also your fleet.
There's no fishing. You're just building the boats. The fishing is like the fluff.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're not actually fishing. We're just building boats.
Because it doesn't say that.
Well, I mean, it doesn't say anything. It talks about a bay for most of the description.
A bay that doesn't exist.
Yeah, well, that's secret. There's a secret inlet. But apparently a large village next to the secret inlet.
Kiwi has been trying to Google map it, so.
Well, Ridback Bay would be, it's Pinchback and Riddle are the designers. So Ridback comes from Riddle and Pinchback.
So I don't know if we're actually doing any fishing or if we're just building a fleet of boats to go fishing. Docks and warehouses it mentions. So maybe that's like.
Yeah, so that's the point. So I think you've got to have a fleet that could fish pretty progressively. So maybe like maybe there's like a round turn that like not only are you like, so you're trying to build this fleet, but then maybe there's a phase in it, those phase games.
Yeah.
And you go out and you send your fleet out and like based on the type of boat, like they like come back with like a set quota.
Because if it's auction bidding, we probably got to be bringing in money too to do bidding on the next round.
Yeah. So then in that phase, we send our fleet out and then it comes back, right, with our set quotas. And then we, that like set quota then turns into a set amount of money.
Yeah. Okay. I think
look
we
at
got
us.
It.
We got it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. The history of fish.
So, yeah. Fish. So I was going to first go with boats, which obviously are usually related with fish. And then, is really, yeah, the whole thing with boats, except most of the early boats, but how we bring them up into discussions, especially in early world history, is trade and making those connections. And some of, like, you know, the really early civilizations, there's less discussion about fishing itself. So just to like bring it up, because I think it's so super cool, is that there are remnants of boats that demonstrate connections and a pretty significant trade between Mesopotamia and the Indus Valley civilizations, which I think are pretty cool because we still have a lot of questions about, right, kind of how the Indus Valley civilizations were structured. But we do know that they were like master craftspeople that were able to export a lot of really fine handiworks. And so I always find that kind of cool, which then thinking about these types of connections and linking it to fishing, one of the other places that I go to in my classes to kind of talk about early civilizations and connections is the link between the Minoan civilizations on the island of Crete and the Nile. Obviously, the Nile and Egyptian civilization, right? And the connection between the Nile and the Egyptian civilization, right, is like so intricately woven. And obviously the Nile was full and teeming of life. And so, again, you know, in many of the tombs and things like that, there's lots of images of fishing. In fact, by the New Kingdom, many of the elite would just go out even pleasure boating. Which I always then think about because all I think about too with the Nile are crocodiles also. So I don't, you know, pleasure boating with crocodiles. Cause I mean, it's not like these boats were like, you know, very tall boats. We're talking like probably mostly like canoe, right? Low to the water styled of boats. I mean, obviously, as old as I think humans have been and humanoids, we've been as a species eating fish. So it's just linking that connection then I think with boats and with big commercialisms. And then just to end that segment of it out, don't forget the terrifying quote unquote sea peoples that terrorized all these ancient civilizations and sent them into the dark ages. My personal story about fishing and especially fishing vessels is once my family and I, we were taking, we did a little vacation up in the Olympic National Forest. We wanted to provide fresh fish for dinner. And they had, right, all of these docks that boats were just coming in, had everything like packed in their ice. And then they were going to ship them off to different places across, right, the United States or world or whatever. So I walked in there. I was wearing flip-flops. And when I walked in, we negotiated with the captain of one of the boats to sell us just a couple of fish. I got to pick it out myself. They were rockfish. Then they went ahead and filleted it for me right in front of me. And I flipped it again. I'm in, don't forget, flip-flops, and there's just all this ice and water all over the place. And then, of course, I'm fascinated by watching this person fillet fish, fresh, super fresh fish right in front of me. And I get, yeah, stuff squirted all over my bare feet in flip-flops.
So the best sushi I ever had was tuna right on the dock. That got filleted like right as they pulled in.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah, no, best thing ever.
Okay, so acquire licenses, launch boats, and fish the great briny blue.
Oh, acquire licenses. Mm.
Yeah, you can't fish without a license.
In the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, who's going to catch us?
Well, we got to make sure we take care of the environment.
Right, can we have a rogue fisherman?
No. The player who best manages his resources and acquires the most victory points via fish, licenses, and boats will build the strongest fleet and lead their crew to victory. The game will last for a number of rounds until one of two victory conditions are met. One of those being there are no more licenses to auction, or there are no more fish crates. So basically, we have removed all the fish from the bay.
That sounds bad.
Yes, which is typically why you have to have a license. All right, the start player is randomly chosen.
No.
So I came up with last to go fishing. Seems like the most obvious.
Right, but none of us fish.
Well, I did try to fish with cheese, as described several episodes ago.
Oh, gosh.
Last to eat fish. Last to be on a boat. And then my personal favorite, the person who lives the closest to the northwest corner of Nunavant. So I looked it up on Google Maps that the village of Isaacson is the northwestmost village that is on Google Maps. Eric's house is 3,154 miles away from that spot. And we are 2,840 miles. I looked up the orientation of the house to figure out who is sitting on the most northern side. It's you, BP. You are sitting more north than I am. So right now, physically, you are the closest to the northwest corner of Nunavut, Canada.
Great. I'm going first.
So you get to go first.
I mean, that was kind of a random selection, by the way. has nothing to do with fishing.
I think that is the best option here.
Yeah. So each round is broken into five phases. And
I was right about the phases.
There you go. Well, I mean, you could probably guess phases for most games and be 90% correct. Every player is going to participate in the phase as they are able to, or they pass, and every player must complete the phase before moving on to the next. So in the first phase, we're going to license auction. Players may purchase a fishing license, one per round, from the license auction, using the boat cards from their hand as cash. Mm-hmm. So on the boat card, it's going to have the boat. It's going to tell you what kind of fish that boat can catch.
We're so close to this.
It'll also have victory points because it'll give you victory points at the end. And then the bottom, it'll have coins. And those coins are your money, basically. So you can't make change. So if you bid three and your boat is worth four, you just have to pay that whole card. You don't get change back.
Wait, we're selling our boats?
Yes.
To get a license?
You're using the boats as money, basically.
How are we going to go fishing without a boat?
Well, you'll have other boats. All right. The license is then placed in front of you, and the license will allow you to launch types of ships or catch certain types of fish.
I want to be a pirate fisherman.
So then we go to phase two. We're going to launch boats and hire captains. So players may launch one boat around from their hand, matching a fishing license they own, by placing it in front of them and paying the launch cost using other boat cards from their hand as cash. Players may then hire a captain, one per round, by placing a boat card from their hand face down on any of their available launched boats. Phase three, fishing. Players place a crate of fish from the supply onto each of their captain boats that is not already at capacity. All the ships have a capacity of four fish. Phase four, processing.
Not a lot of fish.
No. Processing and trading. If able, a player may process one crate of fish per boat onto their processing vessel license for later use. So that is a license you have to get. A player may then trade a crate of fish from their processing vessel license for a boat card. Those processed crate fish can also count as a single gold for the bidding.
So it's like this big circle.
Yep. And then phase five, draw. Players are going to draw two cards from the boat card supply and discard one of the cards just drawn. The game ends when there are no more licenses to auction or the fish are all gone. So then the players will get victory points from all of their purchased license cards. So all their launch boats, each crate of fish on a boat, but not the processing vessel, and bonus victory points for the king crab licenses. The player with the most victory points wins. In case of a tie, the player with the most launched boat wins. If it's still tied, it goes to the player with the most crates of fish. If it's still tied, they share the victory.
Let's fish.
We just finished a game of Fleet. To recap, I had 22 shrimp points. Kiwi had 37 cod points, and BP had 40 tuna points.
Woohoo!
Yeah, I definitely had lobster points.
So winning strategy, BP.
I think at one point I was like, I just feel like I don't know what I'm doing right now, but I like tuna. So I was very lucky in the beginning to get tuna and to capitalize on getting more tuna. And then basically just kept launching boats.
I had a similar strategy. I like shrimp. Shrimp lose the game though, so don't do that. It's better to like tuna.
Yeah, I feel like BP's combination of tuna and shrimp worked really well together because she was ending up like getting a lot of cards. Not shrimp, sorry. Tuna and cod.
Tuna and cod, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that gave her a lot of ships.
Yeah, the cod was a nice one.
Yeah, the bonuses on the license are really the key to the game. And some of them give you cards, which is huge, which I didn't realize at the start. Shrimp reduced the cost, which seemed good. But then I only had one card every round. And then I think Kiwi went with a processing boat to start, which is also probably a bad idea.
Yep, I agree.
But then you managed to get something that gave you cards. I don't know what.
Lobster.
Lobster gave me cards.
Well, lobster was what I went with initially because it gave me cards. Just for having captains, I got extra cards.
Yes. So that got you cards. I never got cards in the game. BP definitely, the tuna worked out the best because that gave you a lot of cards. What did you think of the theme? Did you feel like a Arctic fisher person?
No.
Yeah, I felt like I was collecting cards.
Yep. I felt like I was a set collecting card player.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I did think about tuna a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you say the words over and over again, so that makes you think of seafood, and now I'm hungry.
Right. I think we all want some sushi.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been interesting if, like, you had, like, because the fishing was just plop a cube on a card.
Yeah.
It would have been interesting if it's like, in order to catch lobster, you have to do this. In order to catch tuna, you have to do this. Or like if you had to go to spaces on a map, like this is the tuna space. Mm-hmm. But there was no, you just got it. Mm-hmm. And that just seemed kind of like anticlimactic.
Yeah. Fishing was just sort of like
fishing would be really hard.
Yeah. I mean, from what I've seen on Deadliest Catch, it does seem very hard.
Yeah. I mean, you get paid a buttload for doing it.
When we discussed it in the intro, like, the game is basically about the licenses primarily, and that was, we didn't even think of that. So yeah, it was kind of a surprising sort of licensing game. And then like all the, cause we thought, oh, you're going to have like docks and things and that's going to play a big part, but there's VP cards for a pub.
But you need a lot of money to get them.
Yeah.
Art BP?
I mean, it matched the box a lot. You know, it had in your little card, the picture of supposedly whatever kind of boat that would be, that would match that kind of fishing, I would assume. I don't know. I mean, the cards themselves were fairly clear once Kiwi explained them to us. But I think initially anyway, with the art, it wasn't something that was super cool and I was drawn to. I mean, it definitely carries out that nautical theme. You're looking out at the portals at the particular boat, but I mean, it is nice. It's kind of like with all card drafting, building kind of games where, you know, it definitely has like a certain set style to it because you're going to be looking at the cards the whole time. But it wasn't one of those ones where the art was super fantastic, like in, say, Mysterium or something like that.
Like, I think the card drafting games are ones where you can really, that's where the art shines because you're just looking at the card so much. So like, you know, at least a style Cat Lady, Sushi Go, like,
You know, that's where you can have
fun art. And this isn't fun art.
This is also one of like the complaints I have. And like, I understand why game designers do it because art is expensive, but it's like when you have so few cards, making them at least a little bit different, even if they're all lobster boats, having each lobster boat be slightly different, like adds a little bit to the game.
Yeah, you could have given them names and clever names.
I thought it was interesting when you first gave us our hand of cards and I was like, oh, here's the boats. And it's like lobster boat, tuna boat. Like, I was like, oh, that's kind of not what I expected.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
I don't know. Like, I feel like if you're going to do a card drafting game today, like, you got to do something cool and fun with your art or else it's not going to stand out.
Yeah, I mean, this did come out in 2012, but even in 2012, there were still a decent number of artists mm-hmm. they could have gone with, but yeah.
Mechanics Kiwi.
I like the multi-use cards, but here when cards were so
valuable,
it was hard to mm-hmm. like, I mean, Eric didn't get to do anything because he never had cards to do stuff. Whereas BP and I feel like if the game had gone on any longer, BP like really had an engine going that she could have just done whatever she wanted to had the game not ended when it did.
Oh, I was getting ready there because yeah. I had just gotten my processing vessel finally because all my ships were full. And then I would have just been like cards. Yeah.
So like that, the multi-use card, while it's cool, at the beginning of the game, it's rough because it's just like, I need this card to launch, but I need another card to pay for it. And I need another card to captain it.
When you have an engine that is giving you a lot of cards, then it becomes like, you know, nothing. But at the start, and if you don't get going, then cards are ridiculously like valuable.
Yeah. So I think mechanically, it's just kind of like the mechanics worked okay. They went together. Like they created a, you know, phases that you went through that were easy to get through. And you could easily tack any theme onto those mechanics. But the mechanics like together to make a game were just kind of like, eh.
I think, I mean, it kind of goes with my feelings on like terraforming Mars and Space Base, like these engine builders that like if you have a rough start, then you've mm-hmm. got to sit through the rest of the game and basically you're out of it. It's basically a player elimination mechanism that then forces you to play out the rest of the game. I mean, obviously, I picked wrong at the start. So it's kind of like within three rounds of yelling pass. I was like, well, I'm out of this game, but I got to sit here for the rest of it. So that's my issue with all these kind of games like this. Rules?
I think I kind of already touched on this a little bit about the wording on the cards. Like, I mean, there's little wording itself, but the images do indicate to a certain extent when you get. I think we asked a couple of questions like the first round just to make sure we understood like all of the things. And definitely some of the, I think, licensing cards were much trickier. You had to look them up because they weren't as intuitive.
Yeah.
Right. So those did start to get a little complicated, but I don't know how else you would do it. So, I mean, it is.
Yeah. But with only a handful, it's not like you had to keep going. You
know, right.
Where it was something like with Space Base, where you had like dozens of yeah. different cards. Like there's only seven different licenses, and they all like they do the same thing. So once you know one of them, then you know the. Yeah, you know how that one card works, and you only have to worry about seven.
Right.
So, yeah, and the rule book, like, I mean, it's a short game. The rule book's short. No examples, but they worded it well enough that you didn't really need an example. And all of the licenses they clearly spelled out. So even though it was icons on the card to tell you what to do, tell mm-hmm. with heavy air quotes, the rule book went into detail about right. this is exactly what it means.
Player interaction.
I think it's minimal. It's like, I mean, it's like any drafting game. Well, not, I mean, there was
with the bidding. I feel like it's, I think we've talked about this before that sometimes in these types of games, they add bidding in to try to make it more interactive, yeah. but I feel like it falls a little flat.
Yeah.
I think I said it at the beginning when I said, is this like the Power Grid bidding? And the problem there was that when you pass, you're out. So you're only going to bid on the one you care about. Well, you wouldn't try to bid on something else. Cause if you get it, then you can't get the card you want. So it's kind of just yeah. an awkward kind of mechanic, I feel like.
Yeah, and yeah, I feel like
you brought that one up because that is exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah, and it only felt like a bidding war on like maybe one or two rounds. And then every other round, it just felt like we were drafting because right. people either didn't have the cards or they were too much or.
Right. Again, with the value of the multi-use cards, like you're not going to waste a card on something you might get accidentally or something. Would you play it again? BP.
Thumbs down. I mean, I guess I would. I wouldn't go out of my way. I don't know that it's any better than any other card drafting game. I feel like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I won. So that's awesome. I like tuna, but.
I like tuna. I'll play the game again because it has tuna.
Yeah, I don't. That is not the reason. I can play Sushi Go and get just as hungry.
So if you had the option of playing this game or going and eating tuna, which would you do?
I would want some nice, fresh, fatty albacore tuna, probably.
Kiwi?
No, I don't think I would play it again. I've heard a lot about it. So like, it's one of those things where like, yes, I've played Fleet, but I definitely wouldn't search it out. I would like to try the, cause they made a dice version, a roll and write version. It's a roll and write. But at the same time, I wonder if the mechanics, how the mechanics of a roll and write would affect some of the things that we aren't necessarily liking about the game.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I'm still, I mean, the theme still doesn't sell me. So I
still
pick a roll and write of a theme that I like better, but.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, like roll and write theme, like mostly like who cares?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really just the puzzle of marking things down based on what you roll. But I, that's what I'm curious as to whether or not it fixes the things that we don't particularly care. And I would like to play the roll and write version just to see the differences and the implementation.
Yeah, I wouldn't play it again. That was miserable. I'm always curious though, because like in these games, like, you know, I was curious about BP because like when your engine is rolling, like these games are fun. And when it's not, they're not fun. And that's one reason why I don't really like them, because I'd rather all the players have fun.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was kind of curious about that. And like, I've been on the other end where I've had an engine that's going and it's like, this is great, but the other people are struggling and it's not fun. So I just don't like the style of game, I guess. It's not to say all engine builders, because there are some out there that are fun, but I feel like they're ones that kind of mitigate the whole runaway.
I'm not sure we've played an engine building that has dealt well with the runaway player.
I mean, like Wingspan. I feel like it's considered an Wingspan engine builder, and I don't know that I won that one, and I thought it was perfectly fun.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's so beautiful. So
the expansion should be arriving today.
All right, so that was Fleet. We're excited to play Wingspan.
If you have any recommendations of games you would like to hear our lively impressions on, please send them our way. We might give you some fishy returns. Get it?
No, that was too bad.
Oh, okay. Anyway, send us comments at email firstturntabletop or Twitter, Instagram at firstturncast. And the fishing podcasting camel, see this camel up in the Arctic, just right throwing his line over the edge. Get it, his line.
Yep.
And he says, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcatchers. We look forward to hearing from you and play more games. Tuna. It's all about tuna.
Pass. Pass.
Or pass.
Pass. Pass. Pass. Pass. Pass. Pass.
Eric.
Pass.
Yeah, no pass.
No, I'm going to be fucked either way in this one. Pass. Pass. Oh, pass.
I also pass.
I also pass.
BP is going to be like, oh, yes. And then card drafting and player hand management and just like.
How do I sound again?
I don't know. Very British.